This is Wyman and Bob
on Seattle Sports Station, powered through the Alaska Airlines Studio.
Streaming live on the Seattle Sports app and at seattlesports.com.
Now, here are your hosts, Dave Wyman and Bob Stelton.
We got Michael Bumpus sitting in with us for the next hour, as he does every Monday, Wednesday, and sometimes on Friday. And we'll do our best to avoid Mariners conversation, Bump. We'll just skip over that. There's no need to rehash it. You saw it. We saw it. We all live it. We all feel it. That's enough.
It was rough, man. I just feel so bad for these dudes because you see the talent. You're like, it's there, right? You feel like the talent is on the field. They're just not producing. So, yeah, it was tough, man. Tough to watch, especially that last one. Grand slam to end it. Goodness.
You know, the thing that was discouraging to me over the weekend is I was watching Major League Baseball Network, the top 50 plays that they do on the weekends. There's lots of really good players out there. Lots of really good. And I think there was two. There was two Mariner highlights. One was a JP, and then I can't remember. I think it might have been the throw from Demo in Toronto. But, man, I mean, everybody's got players, especially you look at Houston. Their players, I mean, they were like one-fifth of the entire show.
Yeah, they're loaded.
So, yeah, that part's kind of discouraging. But my favorite was the Daniel Vogelback play where he tags up. We were just looking at that again.
That is the funny. I didn't see that over the weekend. Yeah. Dave just showed me. Did you see it?
I didn't.
Yeah. He's tagging up on a fly ball. He's at third base, and Vogie's he's a different
generous
different
proportions.
Build. Yeah, he's not missing any meals.
Yeah.
And as Dave said, he looked angry that the third base coach sent him. So he was almost running like he was pouting, like, why is he making me do this? And he slides 10 feet in front of home plate and then just kind of lays his head on the ground like he's just defeated. And then he acts like a little petulant baby.
Fight. Yeah.
Yeah, the catcher is kind of putting his arm on him like, you good, man? You all right? And then he swipes the catcher's mask away, and then all of a sudden there's a dust-up. And you're like, not only were you out by a day, now you're acting like a big baby after the guy was asked, like, checking on you.
I didn't see it, but the thought, I just pictured in my head.
You could picture Daniel.
It seems painful.
Yeah, he didn't seem excited about being sent.
It was kind of what was the move? Was that Big League where the guy slid really short?
No, that was Major League. That was Wesley
Major
Snipes,
League.
And he's gone.
Yeah, he's going, come on.
that's
where Vogie was, and then he laid his head down on the ground like he was sleepy, yeah. and then he starts a fight with the catcher who was trying to help him out. He was like comforting him, like, it's okay, you know, here,
it's okay, big fella. Know, yeah. You'll get him next time. You'll slide a little bit later next time. Meanwhile, let's talk Seahawks. As OTAs begin today, it's the first of 3 weeks before a mandatory minicamp on June 14th through the 16th. So looking at this now, nothing huge coming out of this except, Bump, Dave and I were talking about this during the break. When you have an injury history, statements like this will appear bigger and immediately cause a reaction as opposed to any other player. You hear about, yeah, resting with a slight hamstring issue, you're going, oh, okay, yeah, that's, you err on the side of caution. That's smart. When it's Rashad Penny who's resting because he's got a slight hamstring issue, I'm going, are you serious, man? Didn't we just get over this hump last year? And I know it's OTAs, and you're not going to push anybody to do anything. Nothing's on the line at this particular moment. But because it's him and his whole history with injuries, and now it's always, as Dave pointed out, you know, it always felt like he's grabbing the leg when he's walking off the field. When you hear that, what do you think?
I go, no, Rashad, no, don't do it.
Don't revert back.
I've been in his corner this whole offseason. I'm like, he's going to have a good year. He's going to get his carries. He's going to be the guy good to go. So when you hear this news, I mean, you automatically start to think of negative things. But, you know, you can say he has nothing to prove, but he really does have something to prove, right?
He's on a one-year deal.
Can you stay healthy? And the hammies, man, once that hammy goes a little bit, it's something that lingers for a long time. So I hope they're just being extremely cautious and it's allowing the young man to rest.
Yeah, this one drives me crazy. It really does. Because Bob and I were talking about this. I got a chance to talk to him in 2019. Love the kid.
Yeah.
Love him and been rooting for him. And he's a big, thick dude who, you know, I was telling Bob that I was telling him during the interview, you ever think about running people over? And he's like, yeah, you know, actually, I'm a pretty big dude. I'm like, yeah, because, you know, if you don't know if a guy's going to run you over or, you know, put a move on you, that's a tough deal. So, yeah, I mean, Bob interviewed him, found him to be, you know, just a charming, nice guy.
Great guy.
You root for, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. And this just, it really bothers me because – the hamstring thing, first of all, that's the one thing, like, well, maybe I wasn't fast enough to pull a hamstring. Although, you know, down at the media combine, I did get a little twinge down there.
You're moving, though.
Otherwise, I would have ran like a 5.3. But I'm not really a sprinter, you know.
Yeah, you're working more on your weights and your strength.
No, but yeah, so, you know, I was telling Bob, I'm like, you should be, why don't you put money into, you know, the offseason, like, not just the guys down there. Be like Russell. Put, like, you know, a couple hundred thousand into a trainer who, get a hamstring expert. Get a guy that, you know, you should be stretched out all the time. I mean, to me, it's not a lazy injury, but to me, it's like, okay, the first place I go is like, were you working hard enough? Mm-hmm. Do you agree with that? I mean, because I didn't, like I said, not fast enough to pull the hammy, but, you know, I just felt like whenever somebody did that, I'm like, well, you should have been stretching more, or you should have, you know, done this more or something, because, and especially when it comes, and especially because it's him, you know, if it was anybody else, you'd just be going, okay.
You go, yeah.
I played with a guy, Chris Ivory. He played in the league for a while.
Oh, yeah, with the Saints.
Yeah, he started at Washington State, and this dude would get hurt every single year, but he came in jacked. Like, as a freshman, he looked like a grown man. And we're always used to tell him, like, you need more body fat on you, dog. Like, that's why you keep pulling your hamstring and all that
stuff.
It's
like a track
athlete. Yeah. So I don't know what his body comp is. Maybe that has something to do with it. And then I like where you went to is being in shape. I was in the worst shape of my life when I was playing in Canada. You know what I kept doing? I kept pulling my hamstring. I mean, because your body's not ready for that explosive movement. So we're making assumptions. There's a lot of places we can go with this. I hope it's none of that. I hope it's just a random thing. But with that injury history, man, you start to wonder.
Yeah, you hear it attached to that name. And this may be a nothing. They're looking at it going, this is an OTA. Why would we push this guy if he's got a hangnail? Just let him sit there.
Well, good. I hope we're overreacting.
Yeah, and I'm betting we are. But his history is so substantial that you can't help but go, okay, is he back to who he was before Adrian Peterson talked to him? Because that was, you know, when we talked about it last year, Bob, Dave was making the point that maybe Adrian's the guy that got to him and said, listen, man, you got to learn to play through a level of pain or injury. You're hurt. You're not injured. Yeah. You know, you can't come off every time there's a little twinge or a little ache. And, you know, that he sort of overcame that last year, and everybody credited AP with that. But now it feels like you read this and you're going, okay, is he back to pre-AP? Is he that guy again who's going to – we're going to see him waving like, I'm coming out.
Yeah.
Send in the backup.
So, well, and coaches hate that. You know, that's the thing. The coaches,
when you're waving to come out,
well, you just can't rely on him. You know, you're like, oh gosh, oh, he's got this again. And I'm not saying that's what this is. We don't really know. It's an overreaction, definitely, because this is an OTA. It really doesn't matter. But still, it just, like Bob said, because of the history and everything, it's like I'm probably going to be a little bit harder on him.
Yeah,
because of that.
This is why you drafted Ken Walker, because you just don't know what that backfield's looking like. There's your insurance policy, Ken Walker.
Yeah, and we don't know what's going to go on with Chris Carson. It's still, you know, we try to read between the lines on any comments made about him, and none of them seem, hey, man, he's looking good.
No.
You know, we're really excited when he gets here. And nothing like that. It's just kind of,
it's quiet.
We're going to wait and see. And, you know, he's got a neck thing, and you're just like, okay, that doesn't sound like anything I can count on.
Yeah, maybe Chad Morton, this is what I would do. I'd go over to Rashad and say, oh, man, this Ken Walker kid sure is looking good, man. I love the way he runs. Yeah, he seems like his hamstrings are good, too.
Right? Wouldn't that motivate you? Like,
yes.
I remember they drafted Deion Butler when I was there. I wasn't drafted, but in my mind, I'm thinking, like, this is my spot. They drafted Deion Butler, 5'11", 175 pounds. I'm like, they drafted another me. You know, like, you feel that pressure, man. So I hope that Rashad sees it. Or maybe he thinks he's done enough. You know, he's played the last 5-6 games well, and he feels like he can sit out a practice or two. But if I'm him, if I can be out there, you got to be out there. And I would like to think that's his mentality, right? If I'm healthy, I should be out there. You better get AP on speed dial or something. Text him, holler at him, get your mind right again.
Well, and he's playing for his next contract. He only signed a 1-year deal.
Yeah, right.
So you're in that same boat again of proving yourself to whether it's the Seahawks or another team that I'm worthy of a multi-year investment. You know, this is his year. He did it last year at the tail end. 4 out of 5 games were good, off the charts good, so that got you this contract. Because at the beginning of last year, if we would have asked the question, well, you think they're going to bring Penny back? It would have been like, what's the matter with you?
Yeah.
I would be surprised if he makes it through the entire season on the roster. You know, so those 4 games got him this deal. he's got to be looking at this season like, all right, this is how I get the big deal. This is how I get the multi-year commitment from Seahawks or some other team.
Love Rashad Penny. Just
love him.
Just a very low CIFCO rating, which is George Dyer, our D-line coach, used to call it CIFCO. It's can I bleeping count on him?
Yeah.
You know, and that's the thing. On him is O-N-E-M, okay? So can I effing count on him? But, yeah, that was huge with coaches. And, that you know, I keep bringing up the coaches because they want reliability. They want a guy who – I was saying to Bob that, you know, every year we don't think about this because the coaches never come out and say this, but a lot of times it's just like the guy's too dumb. You know, he can't do his assignments. He can't get in the right place and everything. We can't have him. I don't care how athletic he is. And, you know, the same thing with the injuries. And especially if it's somebody that, oh, it's this tweak and that tweak. And then remember I'm piling on right now, but 2019, I think that was that his rookie year or second year? I'm trying to remember. Anyway, he hurt his finger.
Yeah.
And that set him back. Like, it's your finger.
Yeah.
I mean, how does that... You know, so, I mean, I think he has that history, and it's one of those things that you just have to put out of your mind. I was talking about adrenaline and how, you know, you had to rely on that as a player because, you know, it wasn't a big deal, but, like, I had a cracked – it was my second toe, you know, and I'm like, I'm not missing a game because of a cracked toe because somebody stepped on my foot. Yeah. I think it was Boogie, Jeff Bryan, who's like 300 pounds. And so – but, you know, you're hurting all week, and then the game gets there, and then the adrenaline comes, and then you just forget about all that until the end of the game. So, yeah, I'm wondering if he's missing that part or whatever. But, look, we're probably blowing this thing up. It's early.
I hope we are.
Yeah. But I just – that's just not something you want to hear from him.
No. Yeah, and I get it with the guy. Like, if this were DK, his body makes sense with that. Super tightly wound, 2% body fat. He's got that cellophane skin where you see every fiber of every muscle. Yeah. That's not Rashad. That is certainly not his body type. No. So he's not one of the tightly wound who's just cut and probably needs more body. That's not who he is at all if you've been in the locker room. So we saw this with Paul Richardson. Paul Richardson, the receiver, really talented, always hurt, always a hamstring.
And his, it's true. Well, remember he had the one where he had a compound fracture of his finger and they wanted to take him in. And he goes, only if you let me come back out.
Yeah.
And they took him in, and he pulled his glove off, and there was blood everywhere. And then they sew him up. He comes back in and catches the winning touchdown.
Yeah.
So, I mean, he had a different attitude about it, but he got hurt.
And he's another guy that I think had a good final season with the Hawks and worked it into a pretty big contract with Washington, if I remember correctly. Yeah. So he was a guy who finally was able to, at least for a season, overcome the injury bug that had plagued his entire time here and then worked his way into a big deal, which is what Rashad was hoping to do, worked his way into a one-year deal, but this is another prove it year.
Yeah, and here's the thing about Rashad too, right? He was never injured until he got to the NFL. A lot of us, you play sports your whole life, you deal with injuries, you learn, okay, I'm just dinged up a little bit. Maybe he hasn't learned that lesson yet. You know, maybe he hasn't learned, like, look, this is just a little bit of pain. I'm going to that with my 12-year-old right now. He's like, Dad, my groin hurts. I'm like, I'm like, run. I'm like, you look good to me, dog. Get out there and keep playing, dude. So he's never been injured, so hopefully this is something he can overcome.
You're right about Rashad Penny, by the way. He had like a superior medical report going into the draft, so there was none of this. I think he missed one or two games. I think he played in like 50 or 48 college football games, you know, at running back where you're – and, you know, back – he's not like blocking or anything. They're getting him the ball on every snap pretty much.
Hey, let's shift gears here, talk a little college football, because what's been going on recently I find wildly entertaining.
I love it.
Big-time coaches taking just direct shots at each other, and it started with all people Nick Saban. He's accusing somebody else of behavior that's a little below board, talking about Texas A&M.
You've read about them. You know who they are. I mean, we were second in recruiting last year. A&M was first. A&M bought every player on their team, made a deal for name, image, and likeness. All right, we didn't buy one player. All right, but I don't know if we're going to be able to sustain that in the future because more and more people are doing it.
Uh-oh.
What does he mean there? Because are you telling me you don't have NIL guys on your team?
Of course he does.
Nick?
Yes.
Yeah, so, I mean.
They just lost. Yeah. They lost out. They were second. Texas A&M was first.
Right.
That chapped him.
So yeah, that was a very strange. I mean, it's like different degrees of. And by the way, You know, this hasn't been proven, but I'm sure that Alabama has paid a player or two in their time.
You know what I'm hearing? I'm hearing him say, Alabama boosters, your pockets ain't as deep as Texas A&M boosters. As
he's
USC
challenging,
boosters.
Yeah. Challenging like, the boosters.
Like to
boosters,
up the ante.
Come on now. Like, if we want to, if we still want to compete, let's go. And I love it because the playing field is being evened out a little bit. Right? You don't have to be Alabama to get the number one player in the country, Jackson State, Deion Sanders, wouldn't grab, I think Trevor Walker is his name or something like that. And he pulled him. So Nick Saban has seen this happen. He goes, all right, we need more money. And I don't like that other schools are able to get these top guys. You cannot no longer just lean on we are Bama. It's we are Bama, how deep are your pockets? What you going to give me?
Well, and Jimbo Fisher is who he was taking a shot at, saying they bought all of their players. Here was Jimbo's response.
It's amazing. Some people think they're God. Go dig into how God did his deal. You may find out about a guy that a lot of things you don't want to know. We built him up to be the czar of football. Go dig into his past or anybody that's ever coached with him. You can find out anything you want to find out, what he does and how he does it. And it's despicable.
I love
it. Wow.
Let's go.
Oh, and then you got Steve Spurrier weighing in over the weekend on it. And my takeaway, I'm going, all right, if you're a current or former head coach of any big-time program, sorry, Dave, but I'm just kidding. But, you know, when you're talking about Alabama, when you're talking about, you know, South Carolina, any of these Florida schools, any of the that have been traditionally the big-time programs, chances are you probably didn't do everything above board. So you might want to just pipe down rather than enter the fray as Spurrier did, saying, you know, well, did Saban say anything that wasn't true? I was like, nah, you're just inviting people to go, well, you know, in this year, Spurrier's Gamecocks did this, and then they had this player that did this. They're just going to start digging up everything that took place in your past as a head coach.
Can you imagine, right? There was no Twitter, no social media. Like, you didn't have access to coaches and players like you do now.
Yeah.
I went on some trips, guys, and there was some shady stuff that went down on my trips. And I'm the era right before social media got popping, right? Mm-hmm. So I can only imagine. Can you imagine 1995?
Yeah, what was Bobby Bowden doing? Like, what was Barry Switzer doing? What was Jimmy Johnson?
What were they saying? If you're not cheating, you're not trying? They were trying. I guarantee you all those coaches were trying to get these top players.
I was never offered anything. One time I did one illegal thing. I was the house manager at the Delt House that we lived at Stanford. And so I traded two of my tickets for a garbage can for my room. And I thought it was going to be like a big one because I was in charge of ordering all the cleaning supplies for the house. And I thought they were going to give me this big one. And it was this little tiny one that they gave me. But as far as violations go.
Is it one of those silver ones that was wrapped with a picture of Farrah Fawcett on it or something?
Yeah, I wish. It wasn't even that big. Yeah. Yeah, I didn't. The worst thing that happened to me during a recruiting thing was, who's the guy I just mentioned his name? Jerry Faust.
Yeah.
And he was a guy that coached at like Moeller High School, legendary, and he was the coach at Notre Dame. And on the last day, he came into my room, and he's like, we need to know whether you're going to come here or not, like right now. And I'm like, no, I'm not, you know, which was tough for a 17-year-old kid. And then he goes, all right, let's go. And we get in the elevator, and we go down. All the recruits are there waiting to go eat breakfast. And he's like, he's going to Stanford, you know, and walks off. And everybody's looking at me, and I felt like I was
the jerk.
2 inches high, yeah. But, I mean, as far as the money and the things that are going on now, I mean, this NIL, I talked to a coach who coaches quarterbacks in college football, and he was talking about how these guys are showing up with, you know, like $1 million in their pocket. And, you know, those guys are – you're not going to end up being around the team, right? Probably. You're not going to live in the dorms. Yeah. If you got $1 million, I mean, and that's no exaggeration. That's the kind of money that we're talking about right now with these guys that are, you know, 17, 18 years old.
Even – there was this kid who transferred from UW who went to USC. They gave him $100,000 in his own apartment. I mean, why would you hang out with your teammates? Like, and that's the part that – is they're going to miss is the true college experience, right?
Right.
Making a big old pot of spaghetti that's going to last 3 days because you guys are on your struggle meals. Top ramen at night. You know what I mean? Like, it's a struggle in the moment, but you look back at it, and those were good times.
Yeah, like, you remember that fondly.
Yeah, maybe now these guys are balling right now. It's crazy.
I remember somebody saying, yeah, when they were complaining about this whole thing, this is like 5-10 years ago. I'm like, yeah, I remember a lot of times when, you know, when I was in college, I went to bed hungry. I'm like, yeah, me too. So yeah. Everybody did. And that's where you got together and, you know, put your change together and yep. said, let's get a pizza, you know, or whatever. But, I mean, yeah, that was part of it. It's kind of a struggle. You're meant to struggle, yeah. I think. You know, you're playing for a scholarship. You're getting a free education. And, you know, you're meant to struggle during that time. But, you know, college football, they're making so much money that, you know, everybody sees it like, okay, we need to share it with the guys who actually matter. Mm-hmm. But, you know, it's funny, like the jersey sales and stuff like that. If mm-hmm. somebody would have – if there had been a bunch of 92 jerseys in, at Stanford Stadium, I wouldn't have been going, hey, why aren't I getting paid for that? I would have been like, oh, that's cool. Gee, thanks for the, you know, the support.
Everybody loves me.
Yeah. So, but now, you know, you're getting money people involved and.
Well, and then where does it end? Because I'm on the side of these guys being compensated for what they're bringing to the table, because it's not about, they're not student athletes anymore. These guys are producing tens of millions of dollars for these institutions. And you've got coaches that are making tens of millions of dollars, but the players, they can't transfer. They're not getting anything out of being the product that, you know, it's built around their presence. So in as much as education is valuable, it doesn't mean as much to every single person. Not everybody's on the same wavelength with education. There are some that are only going there because it's a means to an end. I'm going to this college because that's how I get to the pros.
Look, I went to Washington State, and it wasn't because their communication system was awesome. I went there to play football to get a chance to be in the NFL. And you're right, like, these guys are the product, right? They're the ones on the field. They're the reason why there's 50,000 people at a game. And I remember looking into the crowd and seeing number 5 jerseys. And I had that feeling, like, man, that's cool, man. Like, somebody's wearing my jersey, you know? Yeah. And then I think now, I'm like, man, if I got like 5% of those sales, man, what life would have been great in college.
You'd have had $74.
It's all.
But life was.
but you're right.
Life was great.
It was great. Yeah. It was great. It's just a different kind of great for these guys.
So do you I think I know Dave's answer to this, but do you wish this was in place when you were playing?
What? I was the number 8 receiver in the country. I would have got like $1 million off top. I mean, yeah, hindsight, I would have bought my mom a house. I would have got a nice car. Me and my boys are talking about it. I'm like, man, I would have bought like 3 apartments in Pullman. Like, I would have all these crazy ideas. But I'm just glad that I helped get these guys to where they are, right? And anyone who played college sports, you're a part of this. You're not reaping the benefits, but you're a part of this.
What would you do? Okay. How would you?
What would your answer, though?
Well, I mean, it kind of ties into what I want to ask Bump here is like, because I feel like, look, my dad would have said, hey, look, I'm going to take, let's say it was $100,000. I'm going to take 95 of it and we're going to put it in a bank. Mm-hmm. And then you're going to have to come to me for this, that, and the other, mm-hmm. you know? So, but what if your son gets a scholarship? You know, somewhere, and he becomes one of those guys. I mean, what as a parent, like, because I mean, these are young kids. The thing with money is that, you know, you're meant to. It's opposite for athletes. Like, you get it all up front when you don't really know that much about money, yeah. and you don't know how to invest it and what's valuable and what isn't and everything and how you know. But most people, they start off at the bottom, and then by the time they're like 50, they start to come into money and understand all that. It's the opposite. So how. You got to protect your son, right?
Yeah.
Like, there's lots of pitfalls.
That's why he'd be his manager and take 10%.
You know I'm getting my 10%, for sure. Man, I used to wipe your butt, take it to practice, all that stuff. I'm taking mine, we're going to save some, and then I'm giving you a monthly stipend.
An allowance.
Don't blow it.
No, but honestly, you would, right? Because, I mean,
yeah, for sure.
The thing I would say to my son, I would be like, hey, you want to go through the whole Stanford, or, you know, experience. You want to be like a normal student. You want to go through the college experience. Yeah. You want to, you know, maybe have to struggle a little bit and just, you know, the camaraderie with your friends and all that stuff instead of like the one place you said where the kid had an apartment,
yeah.
his own apartment and $1 million.
Yeah.
I mean, you're probably not going to hang out with your buddies and you're not going to get to bond and have that whole experience. So.
You're never going to have a night where you go and buy 20 tacos from Taco Bell and walk into the apartment like a hero.
You're the hero. Yeah, he saved the day. Saved the day. All right. DK Metcalf may not be the fastest man on the team anymore. We'll get into that next. A little news around the Seahawks roster additions. It is Wyman and Bob with Michael Bumpuson. You're listening to Seattle Sports Station on 710 and the Seattle Sports app.
Wyman and Bob.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studio.
On Seattle's Sports Station.
It's nothing to brag about, Bob.
I'm never going out with you guys and paying. You have to take out a loan. Love of God.
We do it big.
It's fun on the road trips.
Yeah.
Talk as long as you're not paying.
Yeah.
It is Wyman and Bob. Michael Bumpus in for the hour. We're talking Seahawks. The OTAs get underway today. We said during the tease there that DK Metcalf may not be the fastest man on the team anymore. That's because they've added to the wide receiver group by signing veteran Marquise Goodwin. He's 31, and this is back in 2013. He ran a 4.27 at the combine. That was Michael Bumpus' speed.
Shucks, I wish. I still be playing.
But he's a guy that, you know, I'm not sure what the expectation is. Last year, 20 catches, 313 yards, and a touchdown with the Bears. His best year was with the 49ers in 2017, had 56 catches, 962 yards, and two touchdowns. So, yeah, it feels like you're taking a flyer, right? I mean, you don't bring him in with any grand expectations of being a difference maker, because it feels like you've got your top three receivers, and that's hoping that Eskridge becomes what you drafted him to be, is that, you know, sort of, you know, that threat, that guy who's just very quick and explosive and can be that third guy behind Metcalf and Tyler Lockett. So a move like this, what's your reaction to that?
Depth, and he needs to be a guy who's going to make six big plays a year. You know, like when DK's getting doubled, they're paying attention to Lockett. Nice little play action, send him over the top. You're going to use him for his speed. And then even if he doesn't get the football, he's still affecting defenses. He's still keeping safeties honest. So I wouldn't expect a lot out of him, but that speed on the football field will help get other guys open too.
Yeah, everybody's so fast now, though. I mean, you know, it's kind of like the sticker shock with salaries now, where it's $25,000 now, and especially this year.
$25 million.
Yeah, $25 million. Yeah, what am I? I'm talking about my day. but no, it's and just like we saw the numbers at the combine this year that were just eye popping. But like, I don't know. I guess the human race took a step forward a little bit. Like, I mean, people are going to get faster and bigger and faster, and the combination. So, you know, I feel like, yeah, that's great. But you know, people. I mean, does he play up to his speed? You know, sometimes. I mean, if he was, you know, that fast, and he would have probably better numbers. So, and, you know, look, the reason why I'm all for it. I think it's a great signing and everything, but I'm going to be pissed if Will Dissly is not the number three receiver this year. If he is not behind DK.
Not Noah Fant?
Well, Noah Fant is fine too. I mean, and look, and I think, you know, Schlereth kind of undersold him, I thought, a little bit. You know, he's like, okay, he's a really good athlete, but, you know.
He made it sound like he's a guy.
Yeah, he made it sound like he was just another guy, but I think he's a little bit more than that. So maybe you're right. I just hope it's one of those guys, but, you know.
What about Eskridge, though? I mean, he was your first pick. He only had three picks that year, which to me puts more emphasis on what the expectation is. We've only got three picks. We got to make them count. We don't have the luxury of taking a flyer here or there. So your first pick that year, draft before last season, was Dee Eskridge, with the hopes that he'd be a Tyreek Hill type of player, you know, just guy extremely quick who can be just a problem for defenses. So I would hope he's number three.
Okay, well, I hope he's number four.
You just want to see the tight ends get involved.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And we've been complaining about that. Bob and I have been the presidents of that you know, all last year, all we talked about was, you know, because you had Gerald Everett, who I thought I was a huge admirer of his, especially once we saw him, you know, not get tackled by the first tackler and just was a nasty ball carrier once he got the ball in his hands. But you just look at the percentage with Dissly, but, you know, he's had the injuries, and then they just didn't throw him the ball. I mean, there was the one year, I think it was 2020, I think he had 27 targets or 29 targets and like 24 catches.
Yeah.
I mean, these are Doug Baldwin numbers.
Right. Well, so, and they just committed to him a lot more money than I think anybody thought he was going to get. So that implies it was like $24 million, wasn't it?
It was $8 million. I think it was 3 years. Yeah, it was 3 years, $24 million.
Something like that. I mean, much more than – I didn't even know if they were going to bring him back, because I'm like, well, they don't use him. And then they make that investment, so that tells you they have plans for him to be a big part of the offense. But I'm just wondering, you know, Marquise Goodwin I think is a depth move, maybe just somebody to compete in camp. Who knows if he even makes the team. Eskridge is the guy – that needs to step up and be somebody, because that was your first overall pick.
Yeah.
before this most recent draft, and injuries got in the way. We never really saw how are they going to use him, what can he do. I still don't really know what to expect from him, but there was a certain amount of confidence in going with him in a year that you only had three picks.
I'm going to go out and say that Eskridge is going to contribute significantly this year. Now, significant for this team means maybe 25 catches, a few big plays. I think he should be used in the return game because he is a fast individual out there. We just haven't really gotten to see what he can do. Now, you watch his college film. He can run by guys. He's good after the catch. He makes the tough catch. But can he take that next step? And honestly, I'm with the tight end movement, and I think Noah Fant is going to be good. I think he does the same things that Gerald Everett does, a little bit better, though. When the football's in his hands, man, he can go. You can move.
Is he that physical?
Yeah, he's physical. He'll lower his shoulder, and he can block, too. I don't think Gerald Everett was the greatest blocker. I think Noah Fant's a better blocker. So I think Shane said, look, I need these tight ends. I like Uncle Will. Let's overpay him a little bit, and then you bring Noah Fant in. If you're going to run the football, play-action dump-offs to the tight end should be available.
Yeah, and I think Will Dissly is a superior blocker.
Yeah.
Superior.
Wasn't he rated the best blocking tight end the year
college.
He came out?
Yeah.
You thought that's what he was here for, is to be the blocker, and then all of a sudden you saw soft hands, he's making these catches. You're like, whoa, he's a pass-catching threat.
It's funny we didn't hear about that when he was in college, because if you go look at his college highlights, he has a bunch of really good catches, But
all we heard about was his blocking.
Yeah, exactly. And I remember he was just wearing out Chandler Jones, like frustrating him, and that was, I think, his rookie or second year. So, yeah, that's who I like. But, as far as the roster in general, you're talking about D. Eskridge, because you're right, Bob. Look, that was their number one guy. He should be a guy that really produces. But I'm hoping that we're back to the, you look at those years in 10, 11, 12, 13, some of the guys that got drafted didn't make it. But the reason is that it was a really competitive roster. It was really hard to make this team. So, and you hope that he steps up, but that might mean that Bo Melton or Derek Young don't make it, and then you'll go, oh, well, that was kind of a bust there. But also it could be, you hope that it's because this guy stepped up and that guy stepped up and, Freddie Swain did this, or maybe Cody Thompson or whatever. But yeah, I think that's the thing you're looking at right now that you really want is, there's kind of a logjam at who you want as the, number 3, 4, 5 receiver.
All right, coming up, what would cause a catcher to take over as a pitcher? We'll hear about that when we sweep the dial. That's coming up. It's Wyman and Bob with Michael Bumpus. This is Seattle Sports Station on 710 and seattlesports.com.
Scanning the airwaves for the most interesting and entertaining stories of the day. Sweeping the dial every afternoon at 4:45 with Wyman and Bob.
You see some strange things in baseball, including yesterday where the Cardinals were up 18-0 in the top of the ninth, so they decided to bring in catcher Yadier Molina to pitch.
2,172 games, 8,376 plate appearances, and for the first time, Yadier Molina is on a major league mound, Jim.
Well, Albert talked about it. They've been working on this. You just hope you don't have to use it in another situation other than this.
There's a strike.
Yadi Molina. Well, he's got to have a good arm as a catcher. He's got to fire that ball from home down to second base. So, whether he can control it or not. But how about that'd be fun for the Mariners to be up 18-0. I would enjoy a game like that.
Would you? And then you'd put Cal Raleigh out there?
Yeah, put Luis Torrens or Cal Raleigh out there on the hill. I think Pujols hit a couple of home runs in that game, too.
Yeah, Molina gave up 4 runs, though.
Did he?
Yeah.
Well, and didn't they also have...
They did a Pujols pitch also.
Pujols pitch? Was that in the same night or it was a couple
weeks ago?
I heard Mad Dog Russo complaining about it on MLB
Network. I'm actually
surprised
they would do that because he had some elbow injury in his career, I think.
Who?
Like Pujols did.
Oh, Pujols did.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know, it's funny. I was listening to Russo and he said yesterday and Thursday, which I've only heard from Paul Moyer.
Moya.
Yeah. Thursday. Have you picked up on that too, Bump?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
I've been working with Moore for, 5 years now?
Do you know what Bump says?
What?
Bring it.
Bring it.
For the G sometimes.
Bring it.
You bring on
bring
the G.
It. Bring it.
Bring it.
Sweeping the dial.
I don't say anything wrong, by the way.
Never.
Perfect diction.
No. What is it that Moyer says you say?
Member.
Member.
Hey, remember that time when you and I...
All right, well, do you remember that time that Justin Thomas entered the final round of the PGA Championship 7 strokes back at the leader, but he finishes with a playoff victory over Will Zalatoris?
5 years later, after his win at Quail Hollow, it's Justin time again at the PGA Championship.
What did Matt Nelson put this in here?
Yeah, big golf aficionado that he is. He can't get enough golf, so he's just shoehorning it in wherever it'll fit.
You guys don't like golf?
Hey, I like it when Tiger was the man.
You know, I watched a couple of things over the weekend. It was a whole thing on caddies, and they were talking about the caddies at what's the big one where they play the hokey piano music?
The Masters.
The hokey piano music.
Yeah, so, and they have their own caddies there and stuff like that. And just the relationship and the history and everything. I played golf a couple weeks ago at, you know, Twin Rivers?
Yeah. That's near my neck of the woods.
That's my kind of place right there. I think the clubhouse is like a trailer.
You are a Twin Rivers type of guy.
Yeah, it suits me perfectly.
It's a trailer. It's perfect.
Yeah.
You're a golfer.
Oh, yeah. Once or twice a week, I try to get out there.
Yeah.
You shooting in the 70s?
I've broken 80 3 times.
Really?
Yeah, I'm usually around 80, 85.
Look at
you.
Man, don't mess with him.
But I'll shoot 100 real quick.
Sweeping the dial.
Well, this was a couple of nights ago, but it's too good because it's Charles Barkley. So before Game 2 on Friday night, Warriors-Mavs series, Charles does a little trolling of the Warriors fans.
Why do you think the Mavs are the best team?
I don't think they're the best team. I just cannot pick with the Warriors because I hate their fans. Their fans are obnoxious.
I actually like
the players on the team and the coach, but I hate their fans.
I'm
pulling for the Mavs.
No, but why do you think they could win, though?
Because I'm just going to divine intervention.
Okay.
I just want to see these people suffer.
I love it. I love Charles, man.
Yeah.
He does not care. And you can tell he's kind of having fun there, but even I'm sure there's seriousness to it. We're like, yeah, you guys drive me nuts. I want all of you to suffer.
There's another clip of him saying something to the fans. I encourage you guys to go check that out. You can't say it on the radio, but he got out a couple of Warriors fans. It's pretty good.
Really?
Yeah.
I wouldn't want to mess with Chuck.
You can take Chuck. Chuck can't move. You can move. I saw you run. You can move.
Okay, but I'm just saying if you're like a normal fan. I mean, of course, I wouldn't worry about it, but no, I'm kidding.
Dave might pull a hamstring, though, in the middle of the whole thing.
Hey, I played through it. I didn't go to anybody and say, yeah, my hamstring hurts. So
take me out.
Yeah. No, Charles is hilarious, man. And I do get the feeling like he's the one guy on all of these shows and everything where you can tell that he's being himself.
Mm-hmm.
That's like if you told him you can't be yourself, he couldn't do what he's doing.
Yeah, he's got enough money that he can say that. Like, hey. You want me to do this, I'm going to cut loose. I'm going to rip your product. I can't tell you how many times I've tuned in, and I remember there was a game when LeBron was with Cleveland, and it was just a one-sided blowout. Cleveland getting their tail kicked, and it was like halftime, and they come to him, and he goes, man, even LeBron's mama's not watching this game anymore. and then you know how they promote the movie that's coming up? Hey, stay tuned. Coming up next on TNT is The Mummy, blah, 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 or something like that. And he goes, oh, that movie was terrible, man. he's just ripping the product, ripping the game that they're promoting.
He's real.
Yeah, I loved it. Absolutely loved it.
Remember when the one where Shaq had like some kind of a cream soda or something like that, like that he was sponsoring, and he was telling Shaq, he's like, man, you're out there spreading diabetes around the world with your sorry cream soda.
Oh, he's so funny.
Diabetes. He probably said diabetes.
So funny. Love Chuck. All right. Bump, great stuff, man. Good to have you in.
Thanks.
Let's do it again Wednesday.
Let's do it.
Thanks,
all right. There you go. There's Michael Bumpus with us every Monday, Wednesday, and sometimes Friday here with Wyman and Bob. Coming up, was the Red Sox series rock bottom, or will it get worse for this Mariner team? We'll get into that next. It's Wyman and Bob. You're listening to Seattle Sports Station on 710 and the Seattle Sports app.